we're back once more. Ooh,
another fun one.
Of course. Always.
Yes.
As the viewer can see, no ethics on this one either.
No.
That's okay. He'll be back one day.
Yeah, he'll be back soon.
Anyway.
Oh. Man, sorry about that. So, watch any good movies lately?
Yeah, watched Friday the 13th.
Ooh, that's a good one. Good.
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah. Is there a favorite kill?
I realized recently how, like, bad old movies are. just looking at it, and some of the practical effects and stuff are, I mean, they're fantastic for their time, but we've been so right. spoiled with, like, really CG. Good cinematic and
4K cameras, all that.
4K yeah. camera, better resolution. Mm-hmm. So it's just really funny looking back on older movies like that. Favorite kill was probably the spear through the bed.
Yeah, yeah. When the girl didn't scream for help.
Yeah, she just gasped. Yeah, yeah. And that was supposed to tell him not only to get off, to dodge the spear, to pull her off the bed as well. And clearly, it just wasn't.
He failed. He did not.
Men just never communicate.
He did not understand her gasping.
Exactly.
He's like, oh, I should just lay here more. You're enjoying it. You're gasping at my awesomeness.
Yeah, my whole 3 inches is really doing you well.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. The unrealistic expectation that you could fall asleep on top of someone.
Yeah, I don't think I personally could fall asleep in someone.
No.
Let alone, like, obviously, I don't know how the female body works, but I don't think I could fall asleep with someone in me either.
Right. Well, just in general, just, like, laying on top of each other, sleeping like that. I mean,
I've napped like that before on top of a significant other, but I don't think I could.
Something, but the whole body?
Yeah.
Huh.
I don't think. Okay, so it's more so, I guess, not like on top of each other like a sandwich, but more like something like
off to the side, just
where,
a little bit.
Where you're kind of like
yeah.
off the side.
Yeah.
If you like lay that, your different. Arm, yeah. your mm-hmm. head on.
Yeah, but completely on top like that. That
yeah.
was like.
Okay, that's
okay. The, especially with the guy falling asleep, dead weight.
Yeah.
All that dead weight
also,
just.
Also, really
down
weird
on top of
you. That like, the guy was on top the whole time.
Yeah.
Like. Especially when they're like they're done now and they're just sort of laying together. I don't know of any girl that's like, yeah, you can fall asleep on me, that's fine. Like
right.
full
yeah, that,
body
that,
weight.
That's kind of the whole thing.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
If the role had been reversed, maybe
yeah.
differently. But just in that scenario, it's like
a little weird.
Yeah, I don't know. I like the fact that you know the guy in the wheelchair. He just. Like fuck this shit and rolled out.
Yeah.
It was backwards, but I mean he was like, fuck this.
Yeah, I'm out of here. Y'all suck. Walking around me.
Peasants.
Right? Yeah. It was like, good though. It's good.
Like I can walk if I want to. I just don't want to.
If I want. And leave your friends behind.
Friends walk.
And he did. He left his friends behind.
He did.
Yeah. Good. It was good.
Yeah, yeah. And Jenny? Yeah. She was cool. Can't remember the actress's name, but we met her.
Adrienne King?
We met Adrienne King as well.
Okay.
But both of that... both the leading ladies from part one and part two we've met.
Okay. Well, I am horrible with names, so you're lucky that I even remembered one.
I am completely shocked and surprised.
So, yeah. Yeah. On that front, I am horrendous when it comes to memory. I can't remember actors' names, actresses' names. It's, character names are hard enough for me to remember half the time.
Yeah.
Paul. Are you okay, Paul?
Paul?
I think Paul was okay.
Yeah, Paul was not. The dog was.
Yeah, they thought the dog was mangled. Turns out it wasn't.
It was somebody else's dog.
Yes, yeah. No animals were harmed in the making of them, I hope.
And the creepy old guy, Ralph.
Oh, yeah, Ralph wasn't harmed.
You're all gonna die.
I told the last folks. Yeah. Somebody should just listen to him.
Right? If they just listen to him?
Yeah. Could have saved a bunch of lives.
Yeah. Well, it's just like the shark movie that we talked about.
Yeah.
If people had just listened to the people who actually chartered the plane and said, no, we should just go back to mainland, they all would have lived. But no. That's the biggest thing for most horror movies you see is that it all starts because somebody made one stupid decision and then everybody else has to pay for it.
Yeah, pretty much.
With their lives.
Friday the 13th is a great example of that.
Yeah.
As, you know, had they been actually watching the fucking kid, would have been fine.
Yeah. If only.
Mom would have never went on a killing spree. Son never would have been resurrected from the water, however that happened.
Miracles. He's doing God's work.
Yeah. Really? Good though.
Yeah.
Good movie.
Yeah, it is. Good,
great series.
Mm.
I would hope that at this point everybody's.
God,
at least some of them.
At least one of them.
I don't know about all of them. There are a few.
There's 12.
I knew you'd know that. Well, they need to put out a new one now. There has to be 13.
Yeah, I know. Kane Hodder has actually been an advocate that there should be 13. Friday the 13th.
Yeah, and then just stop forever. Like 13 is that's the number.
12 with the remake. Because there's Friday the 13th, 1 through 8. Jason Goes to Hell.
Yep.
Jason X. That's your 10.
Yep.
Then you got Freddy versus means. Jason.
Yeah.
11. And then they did the remake, Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
Which makes 12.
One more.
Official. I mean, there's a lot of fan films, and some of those are really good. Like Never Hike Alone.
Some of them are not so.
Yeah. One in particular.
Yeah. Yeah. Had some good concepts in it. Just wasn't executed the best fashion.
Yeah, definitely not the best. Really weird.
Yeah. Really weird is how I would put it.
But
for sure.
I mean, but when somebody does that on their own and it's their own vision. And
oh, it's still an impressive feat.
Just the fact that they. Yeah.
Yeah, it's still an impressive feat.
Everything they go through to make it happen is just like, holy cow.
It's unfortunate that the Friday the 13th movies have been done in a certain way, and this movie just sort of broke away from the norm.
Yeah.
And normally, that's not entirely a horrible thing.
No.
And I wouldn't say this movie was horrible.
It was not.
It just
wasn't the norm.
Wasn't the normal Friday the 13th, and it's sort of had certain aspects that pulled itself away from those.
But I like that they gave Creighton Duke a backstory.
Yeah. Roseblood, by the way. Friday the 13th, Roseblood.
Yes.
What we're talking about. You can find it on YouTube, right?
Yes, on YouTube. Jason Brooks played Jason Voorhees.
Actor of the same name.
And he also played Jason in Vengeance. Or 13th Vengeance.
Yeah. Another fan film.
Another guy we met.
Yep. I do remember that.
Yep. And then I don't remember exactly the whole aspect of which he's involved in, but Peter Anthony is involved. He's like a producer. He also acts in Roseblood.
Oh, okay.
And stuff. And he was part of Vengeance too as well.
Okay.
In Vengeance, he was one of the prisoners in the chain gang.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So
it has been a while since we...
We'll get around to it. As we go through, we will insert vengeance where it belongs in the chronological order.
What's your favorite Friday the 13th? A couple of them, did you?
There are a couple of them, and it's hard to have, like, if I had to pick just one out of the whole series, it would be Jason Goes.
Okay.
But if I could pick a couple of them.
Wow.
Part 7.
Okay.
Part 7 because they bring in the, like, the telekinetics.
Yeah.
Fight between Jason and, I can't remember her name now.
Yeah.
But then it's also Kane Hodder's first as Jason.
Which, you know, we advocate as the best Jason.
Yes.
He is a phenomenal actor. But even better, yes. he made that character.
Oh yeah, he totally did. And the thing is, in interviews, he's even said that he's watched, you know, the prior films. He's always been a fan of the franchise.
Yeah.
Prior to playing Jason. But he watched and seen what all the other actors that played Jason, like their movements and how they did it. And so then that way he was able to make it his.
Yeah, because he didn't want to copycat.
Yeah, exactly. You know, is the thing. You know, you look back through this, you can see the different actors, and you can see how they each kind of brought something different
to
make the character.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, if you sit down and you binge watch the movies all in a row, the inconsistencies of how Jason acts movie to movie sucks. But the fact that, you know, each actor give it their own spin, their own take, and then.
That's what we like to see in horror movies, in any movie, really, as, like, original content.
Yeah, make it your own.
Yeah, exactly. We see way too much of remakes, remasters, stuff like that for movies.
Yep.
Come up with your own stuff, please.
Right.
Make it original. I mean, as much as I flag on, you know, B-rate movies, and definitely C-rate movies, a lot of those have very original ideas.
They do.
They're not always good ideas.
Sharknado.
Good ideas. All in that category.
I don't think so, but I agree to disagree.
But my point is, original ideas need to be pushed more.
They do.
Than these people that have remade Batman 50 billion times. And I understand multiverse theory, all of that. DC fans are going to be mad at me. But it's just been redone too many times.
Yeah.
I want to see a new superhero.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. There's so many different superheroes
that haven't seen screen time
at all.
Yeah.
And then there's ones that only got one movie and was shunned.
Or got, like, cameos in other movies.
Yeah.
Like, you know, with other groups of superheroes and stuff like that. But, like, original content. Come on, let's make it happen.
There's so many different superheroes. And the same thing with the horror. There's so many different horror. But, I mean, if you just start going to books.
Yeah.
And I know not everything translates well from book to screen. But you could try.
It really does take some sort of, like, really good talent as a director to make a book translate well to the movie.
Right.
Because it is very often, and I know book fans out there
agree
that it's just sometimes it's just not as good.
Yeah.
You know, most times I should say it's just not as good as the books.
Right. Well, the problem is that they try to pack, like, a book into 2 hours
or a series of books into 2 hours.
Movie, yeah. Instead of breaking it down.
Right.
I mean, but I mean, if people would just take the Peter Jackson method to it and do it that way, look how that turned out.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know who I'm talking about the guy who did Lord of the Hobbit.
Yeah, it's,
you know, it.
I think to a point, the reason that we haven't seen a lot of, like, creative original content, and I could be wrong, but what I think it is everyone's scared that their new idea is not going to be a new idea.
Well, and they're scared of failure.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
they know that these things work.
Yeah. Like, they know that people are going to go see a new Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
Or a new Halloween, which, oddly enough, there's a new one coming out this
year. Yeah, but of course.
People will go see it because it's a known franchise. People are in love with the character. Whether the movie totally sucks, like the Batman movies.
Right. Yeah.
Or the Spider-Man movies. You know.
Yeah.
People will go see them because they love the character so much.
Yeah.
And so I think part of it too is the the companies that produce the movie. The like Universal Studios, the studios.
Yeah.
A lot of them are afraid to take chances with stuff. Like back in the day, everything was a chance.
Because there wasn't much to go off of.
Yeah. There wasn't much out there. Now there's so much out there and stuff. They're like, well, we know this formula works.
Yeah.
You know, we know Freddy sells. We know people come out to see Batman 42. Like, they just do. So it's interesting and sad. It's
talking about, you know, new content coming out and stuff. I know that a lot of people really like Tom Holland's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It took me a really long time to accept him as Spider-Man. When I first saw him in the role, just didn't feel like Spider-Man to me.
Right. It did take a little bit.
Yeah.
I agree. And of course, you know, I mean, especially getting used to the other guys, you know, you had...
Right. Yeah.
Andrew Garfield, and then... Tobey Maguire.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You got it.
Just
got it.
took a second.
And Tobey was my favorite.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I think is a pretty, pretty popular. I know that a lot of people, especially newer to the, you know, Marvel franchise, really like Tom Holland.
Right.
The people that maybe haven't seen the previous Spider-Man movies are really into Tom Holland, which is fine. Like I said, it took me a little bit, but after watching, you know, the Avengers movies and stuff like that, like, he really did well with the character.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree. He really did. And, but, are you ready? I might have something for you this week.
Is it a fact?
I do. So happen to have. All right, this week we're going to be talking about Resident Evil.
Ooh.
Yeah, all right. I knew you'd like this one. Although directors Shinji and Capcom crew released it as Biohazard in Japan, the original 1996 game needed a new name before landing on American shores, partly because it'd be hard to trademark the term Biohazard as a name, and partly because there was already another game and also a New York metal band using it. Capcom organized a company-wide contest to generate a new name, and not everyone was happy with the final result. As Chris Kramer, senior director in communications and community at Capcom US, explained to Games Radar in 2009, after combing through a huge list of entries, the marketing group decided that Resident Evil was the best, as it was a clever pun. The first game was set in a mansion. Get it? I voted against the name. I thought it was super cheesy. I can't remember what I felt was better alternative. Probably something stupid about zombies. But the rest of the marketing crew loved it, and were ultimately able to convince Capcom Japan that name fit. The first Resident Evil topped bestseller lists through 1996 and early 97, ultimately selling around 2.75 million copies for PlayStation. The next two titles, 1998's Resident Evil 2 and 1999's Resident Evil 3 Nemesis for PS1 moved 4.96 million and 3.5 million units respectively, kicking off a franchise that would expand to include a first-person shooter, a series of films, and various mobile and console versions in the years to come. The first three Resident Evil titles, however, did the major work of giving an entire generation of players a serious taste for blood. When Resident Evil 2 hit shelves, one reviewer who noted that the two-disc game featured so much adventure it couldn't be contained in a single disc, gushed that the spooky sequel was even more graphic than the original. And in many areas, it looked as if the blood mobile had an accident.
Dang. That's pretty crazy. You know, I did actually know the tidbit about the original name being Biohazard.
I bet you did. I figured you would.
I did know
being
that.
Being a Resident Evil fan.
I didn't know that it was just a poll, a survey that they took
right
to come up with Resident Evil. And I didn't really connect the name to the building.
Yeah,
put two and two together either. There. Yeah. Apparently I'm stupid.
So, very interesting. But I have a little bit more for you. The Resident Evil series reanimates on July 14th this year. According to the official logline, the series is beset in the year 2036, 14 years after a deadly virus caused a global apocalypse. Jade Whisker fights in survival in first survival in a world overrun by the bloodthirsty, infected, and insane creatures. In this absolute carnage, Jade is hunted by her past in New Raccoon City, by her father's chilling connections to the Umbrella Corporation, but mostly by what happened to her sister, Billy. A lot of those names might sound familiar. If you're a fan of the video games, using familiar elements that fans know and love, Resident Evil sets out to tell a story that even the most committed have never seen before. Will Jade be able to escape her past? What surprises does this terrifying new world have in store for her? What went down in New Raccoon City? Exactly what connection does her father have to the infamous Umbrella Corporation? Find out when Resident Evil drops on July 14th. On Netflix.
Oh, it's a series.
It is a series. And I know that kind of sounded like an ad there at the end, but I was just dropping Netflix because that's where it's at.
Okay. Yeah, so when you started talking about it, I actually thought that this was going to be a new game. I got really excited.
It's a live action series.
Okay.
There's a small, if you go onto Netflix and you search Resident Evil, there's a little trailer.
Little itty bitty
very
trailer.
Just a very snippet.
Baby trailer.
Baby snippet. It's maybe like 20 seconds long, 30 seconds long at the most. I won't tell you what's in it because you gotta see for yourself.
Oh, I will.
I have seen it. And also because last episode we talked about our nice liqueur here that is done in partnership with Resident Evil, a Resident Evil Infinite Darkness. Yes, yeah.
With Cocolero.
That name is because there is a Netflix animated series
called
Resident Evil Infinite Darkness.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So it's in with conjunction. You said it's an animated series?
Yes.
Okay.
Pretty good. I watched it.
Do we know who's the main character in that?
Leon.
Don't ask Kennedy. It's a shame
Leon,
what he did.
Leon to... and his sister. Or whatever her name is. The chick.
Which chick? There's a few. Claire?
Claire, yes.
Claire Redfield?
Yes.
Yeah, Claire. That's Chris's sister, not
Leon's. You know, she's somebody's sister.
Somebody's sister, yeah. It is an absolute shame. If you haven't seen the new Resident Evil movie, it's a really... It's a pretty good movie, honestly. Yeah. It's a shame what they did to my boy Leon.
It is, but, you know.
Yeah, I wish he played a bigger role in it. It was awkward, to say the least.
Yeah, it was, unfortunately. But in this animated series, I think they did a really good job with him.
Okay.
I watched it just the other day.
About how long is it?
Four episodes.
Four episodes? Okay. Might have to check that out. That I might be able to do for it.
Four 30-minute episodes.
Okay.
And it's all... I think it's all partially to help hype up for the new...
Could be.
Live action.
Could be.
But it was good. I liked it.
I'm glad to hear it.
Good zombies.
Leon S. Kennedy holds a really special place in my heart because I really like the Resident Evil franchise, and my first real taste of Resident Evil was in Resident Evil 4, featuring Leon S. Kennedy as the main character.
Yeah.
And I think if you go back on my save on Resident Evil 4, we're hitting about 300 hours.
Damn.
That game. Damn. Yeah, I played it a lot. And let me tell you, I didn't spend 300 hours being good.
Oh, ooh, yeah, no, you don't spend that kind of time being badass at the game. Like,
no, I was bad at the game, but I was having so much fun with it, you know?
That's like, what matters. You know, so many people are like, oh, I kick ass and I'm so badass at this game. And
yeah.
No, and they're like, you suck. And I'm like, but I still had fun.
Elitist.
You know,
goodness,
still had fun. I don't care,
and that's all that matters, man. Just have fun with what you're doing.
You buy the game,
yeah,
to have fun.
Exactly.
I mean, if your idea of fun is to beat it and do all the super secret stuff,
yeah, the super secret stuff.
If your idea is just enjoy the jump scares that you get out of it and kill zombies and then fucking do it,
like, yeah,
it's whatever.
Exactly.
Each to their own.
And remember, players out there, you bought the game. Who cares what other people think?
Right?
You bought the game. Play it how you want to play it.
Exactly. You do you. Yeah, so I thought that was kind of fitting with the Resident Evil liqueur. And
oh, absolutely.
Just recently watching that new Infinite Darkness show. And
yeah.
Seeing that there's a live action coming up.
The liqueur, by the way, still smooth.
Yes.
Nothing's changed there.
No, but those who watch on YouTube can see that things do change around.
Yeah.
Within the scenery.
We try. Hopefully you've noticed.
I hope so. Yeah. There's a few things. Here, notice there was a picture there. Now there's okay.
Another picture, if you
well, they're cardboard cutouts, like the old school Halloween cutouts.
Yeah,
only these are Universal Monsters,
which are
the original
classics,
original monsters. Yeah,
exactly.
So you got that. You can't see it, but I have a air freshener here.
Kind of see it. Kind of is.
Kind of. It's Art the Clown.
Yeah. Smells like him, too.
I mean, if he smelled like that, I wouldn't have a problem with it. It's a cinnamon scent.
Just because he looks kind of gross doesn't mean he smells kind of gross.
Right? I mean, that's a horrible smell.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's probably a few other things floating around, like our nice new Scentsy...
Yeah, Oogulous Boogulous.
Good old Oogie Boogie.
Heck yeah.
So, you know, just new things popping up. So, you know, viewers, just
keep an eye
open. It's kind of like a Where's Waldo. You get to look each episode and see something new that's popped up.
You will not find Waldo.
You say that now, but now, because you said that, I'm going to get a little cutout. I'll print out a little picture Waldo of Waldo kinda... and I'll start hiding him in places in here.
Oh, good. And people in the comments can fight over where he's at.
I'm already thinking of a few different places I can put him. It's going to be great.
Yeah, perfect. Hide him behind stuff.
Yeah.
Move him around.
Yeah, just move him around. See if people actually pay attention.
One's for you, viewers.
So yeah, viewers. When we do that, we'll announce at the beginning of the episode of the hidden Waldo. Or maybe we'll do a hidden cryptid.
That could be cool, too.
Look for the hidden cryptid.
We print out known and lesser known cryptids.
Yeah, we'll probably start out with known.
Yeah. Eventually we'll run out of known.
Yeah, it's going to be a pretty small list at that point. Yeah. But, yeah. And we'll just do a different one in different spots. And those of you watching, you'll have to send us a message on Facebook or comment in the YouTube video or something and let us know that you found it. Don't even necessarily give out. If it's on the YouTube video, don't give it away. Just say found it.
We want everyone to play.
Yeah, just say found it. And then just private message us through Facebook where exactly it was. And we'll either confirm or tell you you done fucked up.
Aaron.
Yeah. I mean,
you done messed up, Aaron. Yeah. That's all fun stuff going on.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be good. So how many stories you got?
I have depends. Honestly. I have an abstract, well, maybe not completely abstract. I have an idea. I have the definition of that idea, and then I have many cultures and how they've decided to personify that idea.
Oh, nice, nice.
So yeah, it awesome. Should be a fun one.
Awesome. I have one.
Okay.
It's stories and I think there's multiple. Yeah, there's two or three stories within this cryptid.
Okay.
We're going to be talking about one specific cryptid. And so there'll be a description where you can find him and a couple encounters.
Sweet, sweet. So would you like to kick us off?
No, it's all you.
Sure?
Yeah.
It's kind of a long one. All right. We'll get this started here. So, for my idea, I have... nightmare. From teeth falling out, to being late, or even being naked in a public place, a vivid dream can wake us up from a deep sleep. We're all familiar with feeling uneasy, restless, or just terrifying feelings brought on by nightmares. But the creepy origin of the word itself is less known. I'd like to look into the defining trait of a nightmare and the horrifying concepts used to personify them. A nightmare, or a bad dream, is an unpleasant dream that can cause a strong emotional response from the mind, which can be fear or despair, but can also be anxiety and even sadness. There are some differences between nightmares and bad dreams. The difference in the scientific world is that a bad dream you can sleep through, however, a nightmare will awaken the individual. However, in common language, the meaning of nightmare has extended as a metaphor to many bad things, such as a bad situation or a scary monster or person. The dream can contain situations of discomfort, psychologically or physical terror, and panic. After a nightmare, a person will often feel distressed and won't be able to sleep for a short period of time. Recurrent nightmares may require medical help, as they can interfere with sleeping patterns and cause insomnia. The amount of children 5 to 12 years old who experience nightmares is between 20 and 30%, and for adults it's recorded as being between 8 and 30%. In the general population, 1 of 20 people have nightmares every week. This ratio is much higher in those with psychiatric illnesses. For instance, 3/4 of those with PTSD have nightmares. And about half of those with borderline personality disorder also have nightmares. Those with nightmares experience abnormal sleep an impact, and the impact of having a nightmare during the night has been found to be similar to that of insomnia. Nightmares often cause a fear of falling asleep. Nightmare disorder symptoms include repeated awakenings from the major sleep period, or naps with detailed recall of extended or extremely frightening dreams, usually involving threats to survival, security, or self-esteem. The awakenings generally occur during the second half of the sleep period. Nightmares can have physical causes, such as sleeping in an uncomfortable position, or having a fever, or psychological causes, such as stress or anxiety. Eating before going to sleep, which triggers an increase in the body's metabolism and brain activity, can also be a potential stimulus for nightmares. In modern fiction, a nightmare is often drawn up and described as a horror-inspired horse. You didn't know. However, according to the Oxford English Dictionary, nightmare derives from a period of 1150 to 1500, which would be the Middle English word mare, which meant a female evil spirit thought to lie upon and suffocate sleepers. This had developed from mare in Old English, originating around the 5th century. Other cultures, too, had their own versions of the English mare, with many describing evil spirits, demons, or goblin-like creatures that would ride on people's chests while they were sleeping, bringing on bad dreams. Some folk stories have supernatural creatures riding a horse, or even shape-shifting and taking the form of animals. The prefix night was later added to emphasize that these demons visited at night. In other centuries, the term was broadened to refer to any. So now we get into a list of creatures in different cultures, which they use to describe these nightmares, or they use to personify what causes them. In Scandinavian culture, the mare featured in the Yingling Saga, which is a legendary Old Norse saga from the 13th century. In it, the Swedish king Vanlandi is killed by a mare, which was conjured up by a Finnish sorcerer after the king abandoned his wife. Shortly after falling asleep, Vanlandi calls out that a nightmare rode him. It trod on his legs so they nearly broke, and then pressed down on his head so that he died. Also in Scandinavian folklore, there's a creature called the Sandman, which sprinkles magical dust into children's eyes to induce sleep and dreams. However, in a more sinister telling of the story, the Sandman steals the eyes of children who will not sleep. In German fables, there are many creatures said to invade peaceful sleep. The Alp, Frud, Mare, and Mart are all malevolent nocturnal spirits associated with nightmares, and along with them come several myths about how to best prevent them from entering your home. Plugging up the keyhole, your bedroom door, getting into bed backwards, putting something steel in your bed, or placing a pair of shoes with the toes facing the door are all said to ward off mares and therefore protect against bad dreams. So we have the Kikimora, which in Slavic mythology is a female spirit that inhabits a house causing disturbances, which is the first traditional explanation for sleep paralysis. And then also in Slavic mythology, there is a Noknitsa, which is a nightmare spirit made of shadow that torments children in their sleep, which smells of moss and dirt. A stone with a hole in the center is said to ward them off. The Baku in Japanese mythology is supposedly crafted from spare pieces left over of the gods when the gods created all other animals. They devour nightmares. However, if they are not satisfied, they consume hopes and dreams as well, ironically creating more nightmares. And then the Kitsune in Japanese mythology are supernatural fox spirits which have the ability to manifest themselves in the dreams of humans. Like foxes, these spirits are mischievous and often seek to trick the human whose dreams they inhabit, and sometimes even attempt to control them. The Phobator in Greek mythology is one of the personifications of dreams and appears in nightmares in the form of animals or monsters. And then you have the Melino in Greek mythology, which is an underworld nymph that brings night terrors and insanity to mortals by manifesting in strange forms. The Cair Ebormeth in Celtic mythology is a shape-shifting goddess of dreams, and she is often accompanied by swans. She intermittently shows herself as a human, or sometimes herself a swan. However, every time someone sees her and attempts to reach for her, she vanishes. In Ojibwe folklore, the Asibikashi, or the Spider Woman, taught the Ojibwe people how to make dream catchers in order to spread her protection. Dream catchers capture nightmares and allow good dreams through. In Catalan folklore, the Passanta is an enormous dog that enters homes at night and sits on humans' chests, causing breathing difficulties and horrible nightmares. The succubus in medieval folklore is a female demon that appears in dreams to seduce men. Repeated exposure can lead to insanity or even death. The Baktok in Pakistani folklore, or also called the night hag, is an evil djinn that possesses one's body, causing sleep paralysis. It is a phenomenon which a person feels a presence of a supernatural malevolent being which immobilizes the person as if they're sitting on their chest or the foot of their bed. It is said that it can be warded off with a tawitz, which is a locket containing Quran verses. The panda fetch in Italian folklore is an evil witch or terrifying cat-like creature that causes sleep paralysis. And then in Brazilian folklore, the pisa dera is a bony red-eyed woman with long fingernails who haunts those who go to bed after eating too much. She stomps on their chest and stomach, paralyzing. The djinn, also called a genie, you might have heard of a time or two, in Arabic mythology is a supernatural spirit below the level of angels and demons. And a ghoul is a treacherous spirit that changes shape. An ifrit is diabolical, and it's an evil spirit. The sila is a treacherous spirit of invariable form, and they constitute classes of jinn. And in Egyptian folklore, the jinn is a creature which is believed to cause 48% of sleep paralysis attacks in Egypt. Also in Egypt, the tutu is a lion with the head of a human and the tail of a serpent, with hawk and crocodile heads projecting from its body. He protects tombs and wards them against demons and nightmares. You can have a good night's sleep in Egypt if you're in a tomb. The old hag in English folklore, most commonly believed in Newfoundland, the old hag or the night hag is an apparition that crawls up from the foot of the bed and sits on your chest so heavily you can't breathe or move. Sometimes she may try to seduce you, other times kill you. If the victim of the attack wakes, they cannot breathe or move for a short period of time. The Filia in Norse mythology is an animal spirit whose fate is tied to a particular human being. A person of nobility may have a bear Filia, and a cruel person may have a wolf. Filia usually appear in the form of an animal or a human, commonly appear during sleep. But the sagas relate that they could appear while a person is awake as well, and that seeing one's filia is an omen of one's impending death, and if they witness the filia's death in a dream, it is a bad omen. And last, but not least, is the Wendigo. Some legends state that if one dreams of a Wendigo, the body becomes vulnerable to possession by the Wendigo spirit. After consuming human flesh, the body begins a grotesque transformation. It is said that to see cannibalism in your dreams symbolizes a destructive and forbidden desire or obsession. Metaphorically, cannibals consume people's lives along with their energy. Thus, this dream may then denote an aspect of your life, your career, your relationship, your children, etc., which is consistently draining your enthusiasm and vitality. To dream that you are a victim of cannibalism represents feelings of being eaten alive by work, a relationship, or a situation.
Wow.
That's a fat list.
That is, interestingly enough, the old hag.
Yeah. Yeah.
Check your phone.
Checking my
phone. Don't usually say to do this during the podcast and stuff, but check it. Please. For those of you listening, what he's doing is I sent him a message.
You found a meme.
Oh, no. So the funny thing about this is,
okay,
I took that screenshot like 5 days ago. I came across something on Facebook where somebody was talking about it, and I was thinking, I'm going to look into that because that'll make a great story for the podcast. So I took a screenshot of it so I could remember it.
Gotcha.
That's why that's so funny to me.
Yeah, so in this, I covered a lot of different mythologies and the way that they represent nightmares, things that cause nightmares, stuff like that. One thing I wanted to note is, so the old hag and a couple of the other creatures, we'll call them, sit on your chest.
Yes.
And cause hard breathing.
Yes.
And I think that's kind of interesting.
Okay.
It makes sense, because when you have a nightmare, you wake up
kind of feeling out of breath. Yeah.
Yeah. Feeling, you know, out of breath. But like, I just find it so funny that in so many, well, maybe not funny, but in so many cultures, they come to the same conclusion that like something is
right.
weighing down on
you. And well, in a lot of them, in, while their looks and their appearances are slightly different from each other, they're the same at the same
time. Yeah. Yeah, to, a lot of to, them are, to some degree, are similar in some degree.
To some degree. A humanoid-esque figure.
Yeah.
Typically female,
yeah. Which is really weird.
That is a lot. Really weird, but their physical features are slightly different through the cultures.
Yeah.
But yet not at the same time. I don't know if I'm expressing it correctly, but
so
it's just so weird, because when you start looking at stuff like that as a whole around like the globe, and you start looking at certain things like that where they're similar but slightly different.
Yeah.
To me it adds more merit to it.
Right.
Especially when these stories are old.
Yeah.
And there was no newspaper, there was no internet, and these people on different continents, and travel between continents wasn't really
as popular as it is now.
Yeah, as accessible. I mean, if you traveled from one continent to another, you were spending weeks and weeks on a boat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's very interesting to me that in all these different cultures and different continents that they have creatures, whether it's a demon or a cryptid or whatever, that are similar in nature to some extent. They're different, but similar.
Right. I think the...
It adds merit to their credibility.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that my favorite of these stories by far is the Filia in Norse mythology. I hope I'm saying all these names. There were a lot of them. From different cultures that speak different languages, so I'm sure I mispronounced some of them. I think that's how you spell this one. It's Filja. Think it would be Filia?
Could be. One thing I've been trying to do, and I fail at it still, because I forget, but I have been trying to like take the word and throw it into like
a Google Translate.
And ask Google to tell me how to say it, how to pronounce it. So,
okay.
I do try to do that. I fail more often than not at doing it, but it is something that if I'm sitting down there and I'm going through the story and I'm thinking about it right then and there, I will do that and I will listen to it and listen to it, listen to it, listen to it until I think I got it.
Gotcha.
But
makes sense. But yeah, I think the Firia is the coolest, like my favorite out of them, because really it just sounds like your spirit animal.
Yeah.
And if you see your spirit animal die, that's no bueno.
Yeah, that's no good.
Because like a spirit animal is like a representation of you. So if in your dream you die, that would probably freak you out.
Yeah. And so and one thing I'm thinking about is that, you know, at some point we will probably take that list and expand on it in future episodes.
Yeah.
And do a full story
for each
or two of each, you know.
Yeah, because I mean, this is
there's a lot. There's definitely a lot going on there. That's a big list. Wow.
Yeah, I didn't realize. Like, obviously, I knew in mythologies and stuff, a lot of the time they explain certain things using gods and goddesses to explain, like, why the ocean rises and falls, and, you know,
why my crops didn't grow this year,
right?
Even though they forgot to water them,
things like that. But I didn't realize maybe somewhere, you know, in me that these cultures also had things representing much smaller
things. Oh, yeah.
Like the tide going up and down is a very important process that it has.
Yes.
And like crops growing is very important for the village because, you know,
you gotta live.
You gotta eat.
Yep.
People gotta eat, but not before bed. apparently
don't eat too much.
Yeah, don't eat too much. But yeah, and then like something as small as a nightmare, which most people will have nightmares and not even, I mean, they won't tell a soul. You're not gonna go up to your best friend and be like, oh my god, I had this nightmare.
But back in the day though,
yeah,
I mean, you didn't have TV, you didn't have all these other entertaining things.
So that's
you
what had I'm to saying.
Talk about what was in your life.
That's what I'm saying. It's so cool to see this this concept that happens all the time.
Yeah.
It's something that happens all the time. To know that in, you know, I didn't count, but there's at least like 10 cultures here. I'm sure more.
Oh, yeah.
But there's at least 10 cultures here that all have a different explanation for the same thing. And that's just really cool to me to see the different perspectives and what they believe are the reasons it happened.
Exactly, yeah. It is really cool. I do really like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It always intrigues me.
Yeah, mythologies. Mythology's rad.
And I think that's, you know, that's kind of, in my opinion, where cryptids kind of fall under. Well, people see weird things. I mean, back in the day, people would see stuff and they would just make up the
story
to cope with it.
Right.
Whether it's werewolves or Bigfoot, or, you know, they saw something outside the normal that at that time they couldn't explain.
Right. It's something that tells the brain, like, when you can tie something to something else, it tells your brain that maybe you're not crazy.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But the sad thing is that people tell other people and then they get labeled as crazy anyways.
Yeah.
But the fact that, you know, some of this stuff, any of it, any of the cryptids, any of the UFO abduction stories could be real.
Yeah.
And
who knows?
And all it takes, one story to be proven 100% real.
Yeah.
For the possibility and the doors to open
it's
to
just
all the others. You know, but people,
it's because it's hard to anyone to like make somebody else believe something 100%, like 100%. without a single doubt in their mind, because it's us as humans, it's our nature to question
them. If you're not questioning things, then what are you doing? Fucking sheep.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's the thing. You're just a sheep at that point. You're following orders. If you don't ever question anything, you just blindly go along with it. And I'm not directing this towards any one particular thing or another, just life in general. If you don't question something at one point in time, you know, maybe it's at your job and your boss says you need to do something a certain way. If you don't question it,
yeah,
Because even though it doesn't make sense to you, if you don't question, you just blindly go, oh, or you question things, it engages your mind.
Yeah.
And so that does make it hard for any of these stories to be
validated
100%.
Yeah.
Because there's like you said, there's always that split second where your brain's like, eh.
Wait a minute. I don't know.
Right. I've seen this in a movie.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I was always taught by my mom was, and I still hold true to it, or hold on to it.
Yeah.
I still believe it. Best way to hide something. So, like, all these movies that show alien abductions and stuff like that, what's a better way to make the public think that shit is just fake and it only happens in movies? Well, put it in movies. Because then it gets classified as that.
Yeah.
I just think that's a true thing. How long did it take for our own government to finally say, yeah, UFOs are real?
Yeah.
We've denied it since the 60s, 40s. Roswell. Yeah.
I knew.
You know? I mean, it's like, and so many people disbelieved it and still do.
Yeah.
But because it's so mainstream in media, movies, video games, TV,
it becomes cool at some point. Like,
yeah.
Like when you, all it takes is like two or three trendsetters.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, it becomes the cool thing to put aliens in. It becomes the cool thing to put zombies in your movie.
Right. You know, like in the late 90s, early 2000s, we just had this string of just zombie movies.
Yeah.
It was series, it, that was the same
movies. Yeah,
Resident Evil being one of them.
Yeah,
the Dawn of the Dead series. And there was just a string of Walking Dead.
Yeah.
That was the it thing with zombies.
Yeah. And honestly, I still don't think they've fallen out completely.
No, they're just not as mean.
Yeah. Something else will take that.
But it's just interesting.
For a while, we had, you know, vampire movies coming out of the wazoo. And
I'm waiting for the day that we have creature. Everywhere. Like, that's what I'm waiting for.
One day.
You know, I mean, so several people have said, there was a Facebook post a while back where people were like, what's one movie that you really love that you think deserves a remake? And I said The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah.
And then other people were like, well, he's kind of been remade. And I was like, no. Yes and no. They're like The Shape of Water. He took inspiration from The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah.
And his monster is very similar.
But not the same.
But it's not the same. You look at Dracula. How many movies do we have that is Dracula? Not vampires. Dracula. Dracula himself. How many different incarnations of Dracula? I mean, we even had one back in the 70s, I want to say. It was called Blackula. A black Dracula.
Yeah.
The names back then, Christ.
Yeah. Well, there was a extremely popular video game series that was started over Dracula.
Yeah.
That is the Castlevania series. I mean, that he was a huge character in there.
And it was still him, Dracula. And
now in the series, also going back, Dracula, you know.
The name, yes. And that's what I was trying to get through to this person. I think finally I did. We went back and forth. It was a discussion. It wasn't an argument or anything. It was a good discussion.
Yeah, and I believe he's also present in Underworld movies.
I don't think they call him Dracula.
They might not call him Dracula, but same sort of.
But they do in Blade 3.
Yep, Blade 3.
And then you have all the werewolf movies.
Yeah.
All the werewolf movies. I mean, because the Wolfman is just Wolfman.
Yeah.
Just werewolf. So, I mean, he doesn't have a specific, I mean, that specific werewolf, Talbot, had, you know, that was his name.
Yeah. But
the creature itself
appears a lot,
you know, in media. Or the Mummy.
Yeah.
Or great Frankenstein. Movies. How many different Frankensteins have we seen?
Quite a few. Like,
you know, but not. We've seen swamp monsters.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say that we haven't seen swamp water monsters, but we have not seen.
It's not the same.
Another creature from the.
Right. And I mean, clearly he's popular.
Just a smidge.
You can. Well, I mean, I understand that you're a large fan, but the point that I'm trying to make is the fact that these, you know, decorations and stuff exist with him on it must mean to some degree
he is popular.
He is popular. I mean, so
and why it's haven't funny. We he's seen? Popular enough that some of his stuff is really hard to find.
Yeah.
So
I mean, your shoes.
Yes.
Your shoes are my creatures. Shoes. I mean, but like my point is, you know, why haven't we seen him? Do you think there's a reason for that?
I don't know. I don't understand. Maybe it's not his time yet. Right. You look back in film, and during the 80s, we had all the slashers.
Yeah.
Like Jason, Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger. Early, late 90s, early 2000s, all the zombie movies. Like,
yeah.
There's this thing, you know? And I think in due time, we're going to come back around to the creature feature.
Creature feature? Going to be the name of your TV show?
Yes.
Creature features.
Creepy creature features.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Trademark pending.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it's just there's a trend. If you go back through cinematic horror history, there's a trend, and you can follow that trend. You know, we go into during the nuclear war era, Cold War era, I think it was. You had creature features of like giant ants killing people, giant yeah. spiders, Godzilla,
Godzilla.
My favorite, Night of the Lupus. Which, for those of you who've never seen it, I'm sure that's a huge audience, really, honestly.
Probably.
It's about these radioactive mutant, giant mutated, I guess they wouldn't be mutated, giant rabbits.
Oh.
Like, house-sized rabbits.
House-sized rabbits.
Going around eating people.
Good.
And the best part is rabbits aren't. So, no. For them to be.
Something had to change.
Yeah. And so it's just humorous. But you had those kind of movies. And then you moved into the more supernatural movies back in the day with like The Exorcist, Amityville.
X-Files
was the 90s. But I was thinking like Amityville, The Exorcist, movies like that back in the 70s.
Okay.
And then you moved into like the slashers. And yeah, sprinkled in there in the 80s and 90s of various of other things. Alien, X-Files.
To a point, it's all horror.
I mean, but you can see that, you know, trend.
But yeah, I get you.
What's popular.
Something's just peeking out above everything.
Yeah. And then once one thing hits, it's like everybody's like,
now I've got to do that.
That's going to make money.
Yep.
They'll jump on the bandwagon and they flood the market.
And you can't tell me that that's not what it's about. It's, you can't tell me it's not.
Right.
But it's always been.
Oh, it's always about the money.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah. So, all right.
But, sorry, got off of my little tirade there.
It's okay. You got time.
Are you ready?
I am ready.
Are you? Are you really ready? This one.
I'm ready. Three whole stories. Let's go.
This is going to be awesome. Have you ever heard of the Loveland frog?
I have not.
Well, you're in for a treat. All of you are in for a treat. The so-called frog was more likely a large airless iguana. In Ohio folklore, the Loveland Frog, also known as the Loveland Frogman or Loveland Lizard, is a legendary humanoid frog described as standing roughly 4 feet tall, allegedly spotted in Loveland, Ohio in 1972. The Loveland Frog legend gained renewed attention when a Loveland police officer reported to a colleague that he had seen the animal consistent with the description of the frogman. After a reported sighting in 2016, the second officer called the news station to report that he had shot and killed the same creature some weeks after the 1972 incident and had identified it as a large iguana that was missing its tail.
I could see how you might say that a iguana missing its tail is a... I could see that.
Yeah, they so look alike. Growing up in Cincinnati, my family often took trips to Loveland, Ohio, to appreciate the natural scenery, the bike trails, the rippling rivers and lakes. Little did I realize the same roads we drove on were allegedly the haunting grounds of the Loveland Frog, a mysterious humanoid amphibian said to lurk around the city. The Loveland Frog is probably one of the lesser-known cryptids. Everyone knows of its closest neighbor, the Mothman of Point Pleasant, West Virginia. There are consistent high-tech searches for the Loch Ness Monster and the alleged Bigfoot have occurred all over the world. And yet, the Loveland Frog, though, remains elusive. You could ask any cryptozoologist about it and forget naming the Frogman. They might not know where to even find Loveland on a map. But the Loveland Frog has a history just as alluring as Mothman's, as mysterious as the Chupacabra. Its origin story is one of Ohio's hidden gems. As history tells, at one night in May 1955, a traveling salesman drove through Loveland, Ohio, part of the greater Cincinnati region. He was alone on the road when he crossed a poorly lit bridge over the little Miami River. Three humanoid yet frog-like creatures loomed in the shadows on the side of the road. The salesman watched as these three frog people talked amongst themselves, each oblivious to the observer. The salesman noted they all seemed to be about 3.5 feet tall with leathery skin and webbed hands and feet. They had bulging eyes, wide mouths, and deep grooves on their heads instead of hair. Suddenly, one of the figures noticed the salesman. They pulled out a wand and waved it, sending a spray of sparks flying in the air. The man sped away, the first witness to the Loveland Frog, with the peculiar smell of alfalfa and almonds trailing behind his. The salesman's name had been forgotten, but a sighting by two officers in 1972 revisited the tale.
Hey.
Yeah. I mean, we're off to a good start. Frog wizards.
Harry Frogger.
A tale without a tail. It was March 3rd, 1972. The bracing winds of winter, not yet turned over to the spring sunshine. At 1 a.m., Loveland police officer Ray was driving on the Riverside Drive near the Totes Boot Factory and the Little Miami River when a creature dashed out in front of his car. Its eyes glowed in Chalky's headlights. Before it skittered away, Ray saw it. It was similar to the creature in the traveling salesman's story. About 3 or 4 feet tall, with distinctly frog-like features. The frogman took advantage of Ray's bewilderment and scrambled to the roadside, hopped the guardrail, and escaped into the river. The only trace left behind were a few scratch marks on the guardrail's metal side. 2 weeks later, on St. Patrick's Day, Officer Mark Matthews drove around the same boot factory. Something crouched in the middle of the Kemper Road. Thinking the lump was roadkill, Matthews exited his car to clear it from the road. The lump jumped at Matthews. It dashed to the guardrail and scrambled underneath, keeping eye contact with Matthews the entire time. Matthews drew his revolver and took a shot. The creature stopped moving. Matthews recovered the body and put it in his trunk to show Officer Shockey. He identified the animal as a large iguana, about 3 to 3.5 feet long. Difficult to identify because it was missing its tail. He figured somebody had abandoned their pet when it got too large to take care of. And the cold-blooded iguana was keeping warm from the pipe's feet, leading away from the boot factory's ovens. The legend continues. A recent sighting confirms that even if it isn't a frogman, there's definitely something in the water. It was August 2016, the summer Pokemon Go swept the nation. Sam Jacobs was catching Pokemon with his girlfriend in Loveland's Madeira Road as they crossed the train tracks to the banks of the Lake Isabella. They saw a huge frog staring at them. Jacobs reports the frog then stood up on its hind legs and disappeared beneath the surface. Jacobs took photos and videos of the frog, which circulated on various Cincinnati news sites. In this photo, two glowing eyes atop a shadowy figure stare at the view. Reporters called up Officer Mark Matthews. He's now retired and holds fast to the story that it's all just a hoax, and that the Loveland frog was just a dead iguana dried up in the middle of the road. Jacobs isn't sure. He knows it sounds crazy, but he really did see something in the lake that day. Whether it's a frogman or gigantic frog, he says he's never seen anything like it.
Crazy, though.
Yeah. This thing's real. It's there. There's something there.
Yeah. Apparently.
Yeah.
That's crazy, though. An iguana.
But, I mean, the fact... What are the odds? Two iguanas? Really? With wands?
With wands, yeah. Yeah. Shooting sparkles.
Hairy iguana?
Iguana.
I have a little bit more for you here.
Okay.
Just when you thought we were done.
There's more frog stuff.
The Loveland Frog, a local celebrity. With the discovery of the iguana, the whole mystery seemed to have been solved, except Matthew's story only explained the 1972 sightings. What about the three frogmen spotted in 1955? Skeptics point out that the creature from the Black Lagoon came out in 1954, so Americans had amphibious lake monsters on the brain at the time. But the creature from the Black Lagoon notably doesn't have a magic sparkling wand, and he has much larger stature than 3.5 foot tall frog people chatting along the Miami River. In other words, many believe that there are still questions left unanswered when it comes to the Loveland Frog. The cryptid certainly continues to spark Cincinnatians' cultural imaginations. Cryptid hunters checking out Loveland can wear their very own I Saw the Loveland Frog t-shirt. A video game developer called Glorious Trainwrecks made a spiritual successor to the classic arcade game Frogger, where instead of helping a pixelated frog jump across the road, you guide a frogman through traffic safely. Most notably, though, the Loveland Frog is famous for being the only cryptid with its own musical. Ohio writers and actors Joshua Steele and Mike Hall wrote the bluegrass musical Hot Damn, It's the Loveland Frog, which debuted May 29th, 2014 at the Cincinnati Fringe Festival. In the show, Luke Honeywell and his girlfriend Darla set off with a bluesgrass band to find Luke's missing grandfather, supposedly snatched up by the Frogman himself. The couple runs from Moonshiners, learns about the Frogman's legend from Shadow Puppets, and are interrupted from time to time by fake commercials from a local taxidermist. The Frogman's unique Cincinnati flair inspired Hall, a longtime Loveland resident, and audiences shared the love. The show ran for 5 performances, all of which sold out. Why do Cincinnatians show such devotion to the Loveland Frog? Perhaps it's because it's something uniquely there, an imaginative story to explain why their home city is so special. If you're not from Ohio, you've probably missed it as a flyover state. For many people, Ohio seems monotonous. The Loveland Frog adds just a little bit of drama to the landscape. The Loveland Frog is an emblematic of the watersheds and wetlands that make up of an Ohioan's backyard. Ohio does have some of the most abundant plant biodiversity in the United States, containing 32,950 acres of national parks. With this much wildlife, it makes sense that a lonely, tired salesman driving at night might spot a frogman or two twerking on the riverfront among coyotes, possums, and hellbenders.
Excuse me, did you say...
It was supposed to be trekking. Sorry. I should have zoomed in. Trekking. Trekking.
Yeah, the frogmen are just twerking.
They're just out there twerking.
Twerking by the river.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty good.
So, that's what I have. Loveland Frog.
You know, Ohio could go froggy.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have. Definitely never heard of that one before.
I know. I just happened to come across it in my many adventures of looking for different cryptids and stuff. Yeah. And I was like, wow. So unique. Almost as unique as the Hodag.
With a Hope Lick Mom. Pretty unique to want to go lick some Popes.
Yes. Which, there's a sound bite of the Pope lick.
Oh, yeah.
Of Ethan's impression. Ethics is a impression of people. It's great.
Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whew. All right. Well, that, friends.
Oh, there's still pictures going. Huh. Oh.
That, my friends, was another fun episode.
Ooh, yes. Where we've been learning about all kinds of new stuff.
Yeah.
Frogmen with wands. Harry Frogger. I like to twerk down by the river.
Yep, just twerking down by the river. Hermione's looking weird in her old age. But yeah. Yeah.
So Harry Frogger.
Remember that one. I said that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a good one.
That was a good one. And it was pretty good because considering we were just talking about Universal Monsters, the creature from the Black Lagoon, and then they mentioned him in the story.
Yeah. Comes full circle.
Yeah. It's all about the creature.
All right. Well.
But on that note, it's been fun. Hope you guys learned something new. Hopefully your sleep paralysis demons will come visit you. Maybe they'll bring some snacks, some cookies.
Yeah.
I mean, I would definitely start leaving out milk and cookies for my sleep paralysis demons.
They're not going to you're not going to be able to evade it, no matter what culture you're a part of. It seems that there is some sort of horrific creature for you.
They will follow you. For now and now.
Follow you and all of your fearful thoughts.
Just like you should follow us.
On Facebook and YouTube. On YouTube.
Like, subscribe.
Hit the notification bell.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you know when we upload.
Yes. So, with all that,
bye.
Bye.